Welcome to Awake versus Aware, which is a presentation that aims to break the illusions of current events, offer tangible solutions, and prompts the listener to keep their hand off the mind break.
Welcome to the Awake versus Aware presentation, taped on March 19, 2026. Today we have the pleasure of having Scorp. How are you, sir?
Very good. How are you, sir?
Great, great. And very cool that we get to do this in new moon on the around the time of the eclipse. Mm-hmm. And we have Kalius here too.
Hey, hello. Everyone. Hello.
Cool. Scorp, thank you for coming on. And the structure of our interviews are pretty standard as far as how you got started in this path of not necessarily paranormal, but exploring the our five senses extended and beyond. But tell us how you got into the 14th path or the paranormal path.
Well, it's rather mundane, actually, I suppose. I was thinking back from some of my earliest memories of where I became interested in, say, energy work. And I probably would go back all the way back to when I was four, and I had experienced the wonderfulness of Star Wars. And my parents had brought me, it was actually not the initial release, it was the re-release the following summer. So the fever was still high, and there was a great deal of energy surrounding this phenomenon, what had become a phenomenon by the time that I saw it. And the Force in the film, of course, was what interested me the most, because it was this magical, for lack of a better term, it was this magical force. Of course, they clarified it later on with the silliness of the midichlorians. I won't get into that, but it was at least they were trying to do some science behind it, and so took all the magic away and then explained it with science. And you know, some of our fans were maybe not as enamored with that concept as some of the other concepts that Mr. Lucas came up with. But the Force as something that granted one's power over one's environment beyond the physical. And I think that is what interested me the most, was that concept of the super senses, or the super norm, really had a hold on me from a very young age. And now, this was prior to school, and my experience in school was not the best, and I'm afraid I don't have very good memories of some of the rough time that I had when I was in kindergarten and first grade. But I do remember when I was preschool, there was this appeal of this dark character in Star Wars, of course, Darth Vader. And I had a large poster on my wall of this character in full length black leather and cloth long wool cape, and his lightsaber, which I know now was a wrong color, and only my nerdiness shows now in that it was supposed to be red, but on my poster it was blue. But that character, I think, and the Force were really what grounded me very quickly in the shadow, to use a very mundane Jungian term, that shadow side of things, that more hidden. What, you know, it's the curiosity of the child. It's the, you know, oops, gee, what's over here? Let's go have a look at that. Well, it looks a little dark. And I was always the kid that was like, well, let's go have a look, because to use another in the later film, of course, from The Empire Strikes Back, where Yoda is speaking to Luke about going into the cave And he asks, what's in the cave? And Yoda replies with, only what you bring with you. And I sort of knew instinctively that Yoda was right, and that the only thing I was bringing into that cave when I looked in those unknown places, in those shadowy places, was just any fear that I had. And when I got into the darkness, it was just me and the fear. And so we had to have a reckoning, a reconciliation essentially. So that's how I began with my interest in things. I had a very supportive mother who allowed me at a very young age to stay up and watch the CBS late night movie. And CBS had a deal with Warner Brothers, I believe, at the time. And so there were many a Hammer film that I was able to see, thanks to my mother's very permissive nature. And we would watch many of them. We would watch many of them together. I wasn't on my own, and we would discuss the film. And I was never frightened. I'm very rarely ever frightened of films. I may get a little creeped out once in a while, but we won't get into it. Yes. So, pop culture, the Force, Darth Vader, darkness, Hammer films. Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, pretty much same with me. I was a Star Wars fan and was intrigued with, and like even now they have some kind of a Sith, not Bible per se, but like a book, and that whole mythology. And then even next month they have the Darth Maul series, I think, starting, which looked
Yes.
pretty interesting. But from there, yeah, pop culture, same here. What made you go further into different kinds of mental technologies, or that what you saw on the screen or in books or what have you could be experienced in quote unquote real life?
Well, the It was probably like most of the progress that I've made in my life. It was probably such a slow and gradual process that it was not a matter of, say, for example, the nature of reality suddenly being revealed to me one day. And, you just pull the curtain aside and there's the wizard behind the curtain. So, no, it wasn't like that at all. It was very gradual, and it was very, I think, slow. And I wonder, actually, now thinking of it, there was a I watched, perhaps maybe a bit too young, I watched the very excellent Twilight Zone series from the 1980s. In its early season, it was produced, I believe, and largely written by Harlan Ellison. And there was an episode that involved, I think it was either a joke. I may be mixing this up with Monty Python on the world's funniest joke, but there was a something that was revealed to people, and they went mad. And it was, I believe, some sort of nature of reality. It may have been someone whispering something very, very secretive in someone else's ear that was so obvious and yet so insane that these people were going mad. And this was before, of course, my exposure to H.P. Lovecraft and his concepts of perhaps it's merciful that your physical eyes are not able to see the true nature of reality. And so for that reason, it may well have been a subconscious self-preservation that I would take just baby steps when it came to walking into the shadow. And it's just, okay, a little bit further. All right, well, you know, maybe we're going to back off a little bit. Okay, a little bit further now. That sort of thing. So I hope I answered your question and didn't ramble too much there.
No, yeah, you did. Thank you. Kalis, did you want to add any comment or additions?
Oh, sure. The sort of pop culture angle is fairly common, and I've noticed that with others that have gone this route or have been influenced by this route, They've kind of adopted their understanding over time as to how these principles that sort of lured them in or reeled them in at a very, very young age, their understandings of not only their own interactions with these, pop culture references or examples, but they've been able to sort of apply this newfound understanding in a myriad of different ways. And I was curious as to how that's worked for you personally, and how you've taken concepts like the Force, for example, and have expanded upon them to your own benefit.
Well, it's a certain matter of it's a matter of considering. I'm not a Reiki healer by any means, but I will give you the example that it was a matter of knowing that there was an energy, there was a force that was w around and also within us, and there was a connection that we had. And I think that it's that nature of connection that in my most recent years that I was have been studying Dharma recovery. I'm a recovering from alcohol use. I'm 6 years sober from that. And I,
Congratulations.
oh,
Big
thank you.
achievement.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. I, during this time of becoming sober, accepting sobriety, I should say, so becoming sober was a line drawn in the sand, and there it was. The adaptation took a few years. It took some time to adapt to this sober way of life. To get to your question, during the time of becoming first sober, I was involved in Dharma sobriety groups. And through that, I realized, and in addition to some treatment that I received, that I had been far too antisocial for far too long. And the connections began to come rapidly as I removed this influence on my life. I noticed that there was this need and this desire for connections that I had never had before. And I believe that in a way, it is this resonant energy of human beings that we all have. And of course, we're probably going to discuss a little bit in terms of of resonance with other beings and resonance with things like music and again pop culture and that sort of thing. But that being a desire of wanting to resonate with other people, and I am so glad that technology has brought us to this point that I can speak to you gentlemen and lady about the about these sorts of subjects with technology being what it is, what's Zoom, this wonderful technology, being able to talk to people across the country out of and in other countries sometimes too. So I rambled a bit more there, but my biggest realization that there was something like the force was my wife at the time was suffering from a backache. And I just had this little voice in my head that said something along the lines of touch her and take that in terms of take that pain. And I did, and concentrated on taking this pain from my wife. And she reported to me the next day, boy, my back feels a lot better today. What did you do? And deflection occurred. I simply said, oh, well, you did it. I just simply gave you the idea that I was going to take the pain from you, and you essentially you gave it to me. So you did all the work. and just sort of downplaying. But inside, of course, I was doing these backflips going, my gosh, there is something to this. There is there is something to this. I haven't been just imagining things. There is something to it. So there was that that connection that I made with my wife and had another person say, yes, this is a real thing. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it absolutely. And I was also curious as to what you may have found as far as the enhancement or advancement of your own energy work and sobriety. Because I know myself, I am sober in the sense that I try not to go overboard with my indulgences. I try to keep them in check. And it doesn't always work. I mean, sometimes I often wonder if complete sobriety is probably the best way. And but I've noticed that as I've become better and better at this type of energy work, sobriety plays different roles, and so does inebriation. And I'm curious as to, from your own experience, if there was any sort of enhancement or if there was any sort of clear net benefit as far as the effort towards sobriety as well as this energy work, if that makes any sense.
It does indeed. I would say that my emotional stability has become calm blue ocean by comparison to how my emotional stability was before. And so, of course, that isn't necessarily, say, energy work related, but I suppose tangentially, it would, emotions play such a role
Oh
in
yeah,
energy work, I would imagine. Yeah.
it's two
I
peas
get
in the same pod. Yeah, for sure.
It helped a great deal. I would say that in terms of recovery that we all need at the end of the day, and sleep is just so important for every endeavor. And you find that there are people that have accomplished a great deal, and yet they always seem to lose sleep over it, and how damaging that can be. And that price can be is going to be paid eventually. That the piper must be paid so far as lack of sleep is concerned. And that does catch up with people, unfortunately. I've heard of the author, Grant Morrison, has spoken about doing writing in sleep deprived states. And I think to myself, my word, what are you telling people? The people that admire you. And unfortunately for his work, and this I'm not this is not a judge at all. This is an observation because, in terms of his authorship, as a writer, he's got a lot more experience than I do as a writer. So I guess I can't fault him, but I think to myself, gee, is that making a consistent effort. Your work seems to suffer occasionally, in my observation as a fan, as a fanboy. I see that there's some inconsistency in his quality of output. And it makes me think, yes, that could be because of that sleep deprivation. What I was told in rehab, in outpatient rehab, was drunk sleep is no kind of sleep. And I adhere to that, and I have found that my emotional and physical well-being has been greatly enhanced by no longer throwing alcohol into my system. But yeah, so hopefully that did answer your question.
Yeah, absolutely. And the sleep deprivation is a debt with high interest. I mean, it's difficult to pay off, and it compounds and compounds. And the emotional state in relation to quality, consistent quality sleep is profound, that's for sure. And I have noticed that, like when I've in the past, when I've gone off the rails and just became super indulgent and not disciplined at all. Sleep was a big one. And as I get a little older, I mean, hell, I'm not that old as of yet, but after years of living in this way, this sort of off and on indulgent sort of streaks, it's the body definitely it doesn't respond as well. And the aspects of sleep, which are so important, do take a hit. And interestingly, I've noticed that if I go on I don't know, a day binge here and there, and then the next couple of days, as I'm beginning to slowly go back to normalcy physically, as the body's starting to heal itself and things are starting to get back to equilibrium, I have the most intense dreams imaginable. I have some of the most intense lucid experiences. And interestingly, that's where a lot of my insights have come from as far as this type of work. And so I've noticed that with sobriety or long stretches of it, I've gone a year or two straight myself. I've never gone as long as you, but I've noticed that things tend to get a little flat for me. This is just me speaking personally. It's these experiences tend to go a little flat over a longer period of time, where I'm not introducing my body to these types of intoxicants. And by intoxicants, I simply mean alcohol. I don't do any hard drugs. I've never really experimented a whole lot with any of that. But just alcohol speaking, it's very it's an interesting thing, because like I mentioned, as we get better and better at this type of work, certain things no longer play the same role that they did before. And so there's an adjustment there. And so I find it fascinating, because I've worked with other alcoholics in my life. I've done a lot of work, directly at being sober as with other alcoholics. And this type of work was always a part of, I wouldn't call it my treatment, but it was always part of the coaching. And their experiences kind of mirrored mine as well. So I was curious as to what, and that was the basis for my question. And I really appreciate your answer.
Most certainly, you're welcome. Yes.
Going into further into the energy work, how did you further expand into, say, other types of that, maybe dream work, out of body, what have you, other kinds of consciousness technologies? What were your explorations in that?
Well, I used a great deal of sonic work in terms of finding binaural beats. Very, very useful. I've fallen away from it in recent months, unfortunately, and need to get back to that because there was something to that, what we I had alluded to earlier in terms of resonant frequencies and how again, rather mundane source, but this is how my brain works. I was recalling a interview with the guitarist Dave Mustaine from the band Megadeth, and he was talking about how, of course, the human body is between, I believe, 80 and 90%, I think he said, of water. And how there's resonant frequencies in water, you see ripples going out when there's a disturbance, that sort of thing. And how, of course, we've alluded to a bit of the moon, and in terms of how it affects the tides, and certainly can affect the tide of the human body as well. But I really explored with those beats a great deal of time and a great deal of effort. And what I found was that I, without being properly aware before I was going to sleep for the night, that the dreams were mundane. They were not terribly interesting. And this maybe a bit of what you had alluded to before in terms of that maybe that detox. There since the detox, things became, yes, I would say a little flat. And the work that needed to be done there was it became a matter of, well, I'm going to sleep anyway. Might as well listen to this program. And then let's see what happens. And the dreams without proper intent were the just your ordinary dreaming of doing the laundry, something banal like this. And so it really speaks to the need for being aware as the body goes to sleep, trying to make sure that the mind remains awake. And I suppose this is all very elementary when it comes to this sort of thing. Hopefully I'm answering well enough. It is difficult to put into proper terms what exactly one does with these sorts of things. I will say that what has transpired and may have something to do with this is that in the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, I've developed enough of the discipline that I'm able to lie flat on my back for my entire 8 to 9 hours of sleep each night and not move. And this has essentially made it so that I am able to dream fairly easily, but there again, without that intent, they're very banal. So, well, I haven't done a lot of the dream work lately, unfortunately. I've participated in a few experiments when it comes to remote viewing and was getting some impressions from a particular location, and that I was able to convey to the other individuals that yes, this was there was say it was in this particular example, it was the color gold was present in this experimentation, and I had other people say yes, they do remember some gold, so there was some success there, and what I suffered from, unfortunately, is a form of muscular dystrophy, and it causes a difficulty when it comes to energy retention, because so much of my sleep is recovery from the expenditure of the energy that I have during the day, basically keeping this body from collapsing, I guess, for lack of a better term. I credit my energy work and my fascination with the energy that the human body generates with this continued mobility, because I was diagnosed in 2012 or 2013, I believe was my diagnosis date. And I credit my associations and the work that I do with energy and the energy of other people with maintaining this physical body, so that basically in, let's see, 12, 13 years of progress, I only need a cane and a chair occasionally. So it's been slowed significantly due to I credit, because there is no medicinal, no pharmaceutical that can treat muscular dystrophy, unfortunately. And it's a bit different than multiple sclerosis in that respect. But yeah, so hopefully that's a little, yeah, that tells you a little bit about what I've been doing the past 10 to 12 years with my energy work. Yes.
That's a fascinating and powerful example, and thank you for sharing that. That's really
Certainly.
cool. That's a huge leap, huge improvement. And I was curious if you've had any insights in regards to the physical with this condition, and the sort if you could expand upon sort of the slight little improvements you made with your journey along, with this energy work and how that coincides and with this physical issue and its improvement, like the little niggly, physical aspects of it that, one might overlook normally.
Well, I think the probably the biggest, and everyone that has a similar condition to mine, talks about energy conservation. And I really think that remaining emotionally stable and staying still for the most part has a great deal to do with how well the physicality seems to be continuing to function. And of course, there is it's rather an unstoppable boulder, unfortunately. Thankfully, the boulder is moving very slowly. We're not talking Indiana Jones running from the boulder speeds when it comes to progress of the condition.
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Yes, but you have to sort of operate on a bit of lateral force on the boulder. You can't get it. You can't get in its way. Otherwise, you get bowled over in terms of not conserving that energy. So to carry the metaphor further, that energy conservation, remaining sealed, remaining as calm as possible, not spewing your energy everywhere, not doubling down on suffering, not saying, why me? These are all the ways that I've done it. How I did it.
Hell yes. And it's kind of like the metaphor of or the example of Sisyphus, and pushing the boulder up the hill repeatedly, repeatedly, repeatedly. And what makes you wonder, like, what state of mind is required for that type of work, that sort of repeated work? And so we're it's yeah, that's a fantastic example. And that's a good example for, I think, for everyone else, especially the newcomer to this type of work. The work is done in oftentimes, like anything, like anything physical, for example, is done in small increments. The improvements are slight. You don't always notice them. And then here and there, you'll have spurts. You'll have these incredible spurts of growth and understanding. And then it goes back to, minimal gains here and there. And it's a long haul game. It's a game to be in it, for the long haul. And so the one of the, I think your example is so powerful because the you've recognized the small little things that go into it, the sort of small steps that are required for it. You've been sort of unfortunately forced to kind of be able to see these things in that way. And I think that's absolutely beautiful because a lot of people in this line of work don't seem to grasp that. They get sort of addicted to this sort of instant result mentality. And they need to see it now. They need to see it all the time. If they don't try this that one day and it doesn't work, a lot of people just tend to just give up on it or they tweak unnecessarily. They don't really allow themselves the opportunity to see that their hard-earned discipline pay off. And not to say that it doesn't have to be, this long game. It certainly doesn't have to be. I don't think that's an absolute anyone should fixate on entirely. But I think this type of work overall in the long haul is pays off over the long haul more often than not if one sticks to a discipline long enough. And so yeah, I think that's I think your example is absolutely wonderful. And I can't thank you enough for sharing that.
Well, most certainly. Yes, I'm more than happy to. Yes, and I will answer any questions that you may have about the condition. My ex-wife is much more of an expert on the condition than I am. She's really she was very, very interested in the details of it, and I was more, all right, well, it is mine. I have this. I need to find my own way. And the way that I went was not the technical way of things. It was not the breaking it down in medical terms. It was not that way. It was just as they say in football as a metaphor, it was simply a matter of moving the chains, you know, and getting towards that next first down, taking those incremental steps to achieve the next most goal, I guess. So, yes, certainly. I'm an open book so far as that is concerned.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, no, moving the chains is a great metaphor. You know, the that little, like, you know, like what was that movie with Al Pacino? Any Given Sunday, you know, that famous, you know, halftime speech. Every little inch, you know, you gotta fight for that inch. And so absolutely, yeah. It's just small steps here and there, and progress is progress, no matter how slow. And there's always shortcuts, there's always faster ways to go about it, you know. But I always wonder, you know, is there something you're shorting in the process? Is there something you're overlooking? And so I prefer, you know, the sort of you know, with the resources that you and I and Mark have been exposed to over the years, it's I tend to be in favor of the more incremental, the more methodical process. And it's also fascinating that you know, in regards to the physical, you know, physical therapy and stuff like that is very important, I think. You know, getting the mind, getting the spirit reaccustomed to how you're, and to get more accustomed to the awareness of how your body moves is vastly important, I think, as far as, you know, this type of work, this type of energy work. And so I do echo some of the other people that we're familiar with in their efforts to convey that message. And so yeah, you're living proof that this type of stuff actually does have benefit. And
Yes.
wow, we're absolutely thrilled to be talking to you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be talking to all of you as well. I wanted to say too that incremental, I don't it wasn't always, now I don't want to give the impression that in terms of my early days that I was particularly happy with incremental improvement. I think that there was, because of getting into this work at a somewhat young age, in my mid to late 20s, there was still in leftover impatience, the impetuousness of youth, if you will. So it was rather, I don't want to say, I do not want to say forced upon me. I would rather say it's how things worked out. And I'm glad that they did the way that they did. Absolutely. And I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade my experiences for anything. And I'm just thrilled to be talking to all y'all, basically.
Awesome. Yeah, the feeling is definitely mutual. And I was curious if I've been going on too long myself here. What is curious as to what Mark thinks.
I was thinking about what you said about the sonic experiences with sound healing, things like that, because that's something I've been exploring for a while. Looking into Shari Edwards, who's like pretty much one of the more preeminent, almost next to Robert Monroe, I think. And I mean, her focus is more healing. Sound health options, I think, is the thing. But like, for example, her thing was well, no, that's light. A red light proliferating stem cells, but she had a thing where it's all in frequencies where even just humming a note can alter someone's, because we're all obviously, like the Tesla quote, we're all frequency, sound, and vibration. But and then for me, I've DJed like international festivals and attached certain things to make the sounds more harmonizing. And we interviewed also an RN who could take almost anything and convert it to a sound and send it to somebody long distance. Now they have devices like that, like the Spooky 2, these scalar machines, BCX, but I like the version I'm using from her. And we interviewed her, Karen McDonald, on our Rumble channel. But just the idea of converting any kind of really herb food supplement, turning it into a frequency sound and sending it to somebody long distance. And so that's something I've been doing for like six, seven people, even you know, people's mothers or family, cancer, things like that. And it's been pretty successful. Nothing like immediately transformative, but it's a process. And listeners can take a look at that in our Rumble channel, Cosmic Reality. But yeah, maybe if you could, if you than the Monroe Institute or any other similar kind of sound healing, or you're mentioning the sonic application, or even past that.
The names that you mentioned, I'm afraid I am unfamiliar with, and that is on me. The interesting thing is that the one that I had the most, I would say, positive and vivid experiences with were there. I'm looking for it right now. I apologize for the quietness here. I am looking for it. It is a musical group. I do not know actually if it's a group or if it's an individual, but it is called, I will tell you in one moment, Iron, I believe it's Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse is the name of the artist. And if you go to their Bandcamp site, I believe that they have a free. Yes, they're at the very bottom. If you scroll to the bottom of their page, so I will see here if I can find it, and I can put it in the chat at the end of our conversation today. But there is a dark ambient binaural beat hours, and it's from a few years ago, but there are titles such as The Master, Forbidden Mountain, Outer Wastes, Narcotic Incense. And these sorts of things. And each one has a hertz frequency at which it resonates. For example, the master is at 7 hertz theta, and Forbidden Mountain is 6 hertz theta. And if you listen to them in sequence, it can take you on a bit of a slow jaunt through hilly territory, basically, in terms of consciousness, if you were to listen to the, I believe there is 15 hours actually, and then there's a 10-hour loop version at the tail end, with no resonant frequencies. So yeah, I'd be glad to put that in the chat later, and listeners could have a listen and see what might happen.
Thank you. Yeah, what we do is we put it in the description in the Rumble channel, and like, because it'll be on Spotify, iTunes, podcast app, so we'll include it with that. But you give us the description, so it should be pretty easy to answer. Any particular topic you want to get into, since I've been asking the questions, but maybe something stirred and you want to bring up something?
Well, we mentioned a little bit about we talked about Star Wars a tiny bit, and I thought maybe we might talk a little bit about the the rampant deathism in Star Trek, if there's any familiarity with you all with the or the original series. I was just recently watching the episode Return to Tomorrow, and the episode centers around disembodied individuals that need physical bodies to survive, and they choose the some members of the crew to occupy, and their entities that are that slowly start to burn up the human body too quickly. And the Vulcan, of course, being in Mr. Spock, his body is much more well adjusted and capable of housing these entities. Now, the deathism is that there are simply mistakes made. There are choices made by the entity which occupies Mr. Spock that are not acceptable. And this is resolved by one of the other characters, Sargon. He takes care, spoiler alert, I should have said. Of course, this is from a show from the 1960s, so maybe I don't need to say spoiler alert. But the main disembodied entity called Sargon decides at the end that they are simply going to go on to oblivion. And because simply because of their interaction, this interaction with the humans had gone poorly. And I just wanted to stand in defiance of that and say, damn it, why I, that's the further still curse. But it just, it frustrates me when I think of how small perspectives tend to be on such things when it comes to pop culture fiction and anything that seems to be a being that is beyond the human in power. Some, you know, always seems to have the same failings, and no matter how immortal they may be, because the Star Trek crew encountered a number of immortal beings, that they all seem to have this deathist sort of pall over their experience. They become bored and sad with their lives and see their lives as a burden, and that's the right, and that's on the writers and producers of the show. And I still think that that is prevalent today. And if you guys have any examples of, you know, say perhaps some of the newer Star Trek series or any other show that maybe shows some progress so far as that's concerned.
I don't know about progress, so to speak. There's been some interesting stuff regarding skin leaping, brain implants and stuff like that. For the life of me, I cannot remember the name of the show. I had to stop watching it because it just became way too, I wouldn't say ridiculous, but the storyline got way too convoluted. And it'll come to me here shortly. But your example of Star Trek in the very many incantations of it over the decades, I began to notice, because I was a big fan of it when I was a kid, and but what I began to notice as I got a little older with each new incantation of it, it was very ridiculous. Because here you have a show, you have a piece of writing that's trying to tackle something quite profound, and in some ways it does it, but it's just laden with all of the ridiculous sort of societal programming or mental traps that are so common, in our human experience. And it to me, it just became unwatchable. And the more recent incantations of it are just nauseating. It's just so laden with societal programming that it's just not, you'd have to be pretty drugged and drooling over the TV to really find any value in it, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. And but the earlier ones, like the Next Generation version, same thing. Like you're ta like it has this pretension of tackling, these incredible aspects of how we're going to interact with technology and, space travel and all that. But they also inject all of these weird, in my mind, were incredible shortcomings. And so I couldn't, for the life of me at this moment, because it's been so long since I visited any of it or any of it's actually popped into my head, I couldn't give specific examples on this show, but or as of right now. But that's my take on Star Trek in general. And Star Wars is going along the same route, unfortunately for me. It's become unwatchable societal programming, and it's just, I'm kind of tired of it. I'm kind of exhausted with all those efforts. And so I just don't want to immerse myself in it. And so I avoid it. As far as good examples, I'm just not sure. Because personally, I don't, I've kind of, my attention has gone away from this type of thing, as far as how it's presented in media. Yeah, I try not to watch a whole lot of stuff like this, simply because of these trappings that I've just mentioned. And there was one decent sci-fi movie that comes to mind that does kind of portray this in a way that I think we can understand very well, and that was the movie Annihilation. I think with Keira Knightley. I think I
Those
can't remember the
Portman,
actress's
Natalie
name.
Portman.
Natalie Portman, yes. I always get those two confused. Yeah, that was a great one. As in terms of how this intelligence operated and evolved and what its motives were, it was very consistent. And I found that to be rather enjoyable. It was a good movie. I don't know, Mark. Mark, you're more into this than I am. I'm not much of a cinephile.
Yeah, I do have try to see what comes out and then what are the predictive programmings and what, I mean, the connections with alphabet agencies in Hollywood, let alone Silicon Valley. I mean, that's been a topic in our many shows in this station. But I do, I'm able to suspend this belief enough to enjoy it for what it is. Like, sure, yeah, this and that this, but I mean, I've watched some of the Star Trek movies, even not the most recent ones or even the series, but I just enjoyed it for what it was. I the framing I go in with it is that who's this guy from Lockheed Skunk Works, Ben Rich. He mentioned in some UCLA, I think it was a lecture, that we do have the technology to bring ET back to back home, and a couple of sentences to that effect. And we do know that things like Richard C. Hoagland and his Dark Mission and other books, that there's something else going on out there. So, and we're kind of this whole thing with disclosure
Or here,
too.
or here.
Yeah, and considering I'm living in Silicon Valley, it's also interesting. But yeah, it's just a lot of like things going on. But to me, most of the films, movies are propaganda and death is. There are a few, like Annihilation was amazing. I watched it like 2 times in the theater, and probably will get the 4K because the concept and even the ending, it was very transpersonal, metamorphic. And then I checked out the director, producer's other films, and even though he did Civil War, and I will not touch that because it's very propagandistic, the other ones he did, Before and After Annihilation, were good. But Star Wars is what I'm leaning more towards, especially I'm looking forward to that Darth Maul series. Yeah, and just trying to find the middle ground again, that third side perspective that COS covers. And I know you mentioned before the interview your familiarity with some of the concepts with COS. And yeah, if whatever you have to comment after what we just said, and then maybe we could get into that Bridges of Truth page that you said is still around.
Oh, yes. There are these absolutely remarkable audio programs which are available on the website bridgestotruth.com, and they are very steeped in COS concepts in terms of self-deification and taking control of your life, and because no one else is going to do it for you. So they are rather remarkable in that they can be metaphorical, true experiences as that you listen to the program and experience it as if you are there, that you are in this fictional, metaphorical environment which is created, which of course you're creating in your own mind. Because as we won't get into, but you're the boss, you're in charge, you're the one, so you better get used to it.
Yeah, you said there were a few audio programs there, and I like the idea of the devil seen as one's innermost self, as far as metaphorically speaking.
Yes, exactly. Yes. The most basically placing the most important thing in your life is you. And there's also connection to what has been discussed by Magister Nemo of the self-esteem trap and how dangerous that is to your mental well-being to compare yourself to other people, because you are you. And there is no other you quite like you. And this is almost like it reminds me of Mr. Rogers in a little in a way here. I've regressed back to my childhood once more with children's programming.
Yeah, those ECIs, emotional crystallization, inertia revisits are always they do. That's what I've been doing as far as older material on shamanic dreaming, active dreaming, things like that, going back to the older concepts and say, what was it that triggered me to get into this thing in the first place? Like Stephen LaBerge's work, Peter Kingsley, you've mentioned a while ago, Dark Places of Wisdom, and then the more, I don't know if it's seminal work, but expansive version, this is take on Carl Jung, and we did do an episode on that. But and Magister Nemo has been on Coast to Coast talking about similar themes, so people can try to dig that up if it's still around.
Yes.
Okay, going further into consciousness stuff, what are further explorations, peak experiences you've had, lucid dreaming, even in the movie, like, I mean, Chris Nolan, the director, is really good at this as far as like, was it Inception for sure, but there was one after that that was like more time travel-y but similar. any or other kinds of peak experiences you've had that you can share?
Well, I will say that the unfortunate truth is this, that in the last, and of course this could be edited out if you know if need be, but in the la in recent years, due to the increased energy demands of my physical body, my shall we say more supernormal experiences have decreased, unfortunately. And I think that this is something that could be a good lesson for those that may be listening that do lucid dream work and remote viewing and that sort of thing, is that importance of the physical body, because everything is the serpent eating its own tail when it comes with the body mind relationship. And unfortunately, my body is very much in demand of a great deal of energy, and it takes a great deal of energy to move it around in the course of the day. It's somewhat similar to, and of course this is more propagandist, but it's somewhat similar to the concept that was introduced in the first Doctor Strange film, where the individual that he had encountered was using magic to walk and to move his body around. And I believe that using mental technology in this is the same that that we do with our bodies every day. And I firmly believe also that there is something within each of us, which is the energetic equivalent of a ghost. And this ghost is very similar to a pilot. And the pilot is driving your body, and that is who you truly are, is that pilot. Because you're, as we've said, you put yourself in charge, and you're in the driver's seat, essentially. And that's so much of this type of work is making sure that you are in the driver's seat, that even when you're receiving tutelage from other individuals, that you remind yourself that you are in control, that you are the boss, and that you are the one that is making the decisions. So, yes.
Or in the co-pilot seat.
Potentially. Yes. If you want to think about it in that the co-pilot or the pilot seat in an airplane, they both do have controls. So, the co-pilot can fly at any time, absolutely, as needed.
Yeah, I've noticed that over the years, as my understanding with this has grown, is that the nervous system does what it's going to do. There is a lot of what we sort of co-opt as free will, as far as like our standard, well-distributed definition of it, is not really all that true. Because you take, for instance, the fight or flight response. We don't have a say in that. That at least initially, that can be changed. That can be trained and programmed over time. But there are so many aspects of our day-to-day experience, just how certain experience, how we interact with certain experiences are initially out of our control. And if we do not step into that co-pilot seat and attempt to manipulate the controls ourselves, we're just led by them constantly. That becomes our reality. And it's very, in my mind, very slavish. And we don't really, having first, you have to understand it. You have to come to the awareness of it, of that reality. But there's so much in our day to day that we don't necessarily have control over, even if we'd like to think we do. And it's a tough pill to swallow initially, especially for the, the sort of, for a lot of people in our line of work, the sort of egotistical, I am a predator of humans, blah, blah, blah. It's
We
there's a
won't
lot.
get into my massive ego. We won't mention that. Let's just
Yeah,
that's the elephant in the room. We've addressed it. Now we can move on. Yes, thank
I'm very
you.
much I'm very much in the camp that there's a lot that goes on that you have to sort of that's part of the veil that needs to be lifted, and it takes discipline and it takes work, and understanding that's the first part. Wanting to change that is entirely different. And so yeah, I find these matters to be very fascinating, and it seems like the more I find out about these little aspects of our reality, especially with the nervous system and how that sort of shapes consciousness, that sort of physical, that mind-body connection, or that body-mind connection rather, is another example of that snake eating its tail, the Oribis. And so yeah, you can alter these things. These things can be changed, but it does take a sort of awareness of it in the first place, and the sort of wherewithal and discipline to be able to impact that change. And so that's why I mentioned earlier, as far as your physical movement and being able to move, more freely, probably had some incredible effects on not only your endeavors into energy work, but your overall just state of consciousness had to have improved. There had to have been an expansion there, to some degree, or to a larger, I would imagine, to a larger degree. So, but yeah, I forgot where exactly I was going with this, so I apologize. I'll hand it over to yourself or Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to some of these things of detriments. Like, for so many years and decades, I had gut issues that think part of it because
Oh, you cut
of
out there,
gut.
brother. Yeah, we missed a part. We missed a large part of what you just said. You cut out a bit.
No, just as far as getting through this 3D world and having the, keeping the anchor, the physical body, the vehicle intact does take tremendous energy. And for me, it was gut issues and just dealing with that and being tiptoeing around what I could eat. And we've discussed this in previous shows of
I remember those
carnivore.
days.
Yeah, I mean, and carnivore, like being focusing on more meat, more animal based, did do a big turnaround. Now I ended up gaining a lot of weight, so now I'm more animal based and focused on seasonal eating and just being outside more, being with nature, and that's what has balanced me, getting more of the feeding the gut bacteria like sauerkraut and probiotics. But yeah, it does take a lot of energy to maintain this thing. So, and then that, and coming to that, walking between worlds of the tightrope between what do you call it, the paranormal and the 3D world, and trying to find that line to consistently be there is challenging for that for most people, just trying to get some kind of consistent results.
Absolutely. Yes, I totally agree. One thing I wanted to say too, that is, we've spoke a tiny little bit about COS and made allusions to it, but one of the things that comes to mind when we were talking about the dealing basically dealing with physicality, which is not cooperating quite the way we would like it to be, is that humor, I need to use humor a great deal. And it reminds me of Anton LaVey speaking to the fact that that a sorcerer without humor is really insufferable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, the humor is kind of like a I don't know, I guess you would call it like a very, very, very sharp knife. It cuts through pretty much anything. And creative humor. And I'm not really talking, I mean, I kind of am speaking towards some of the more I guess the more pop culture displays of humor, and how it's all crafted. It's just more delivery than it is the actual joke these days. That seems to be it. It seems to be, setting up the theme and setting up the accent and the way of speaking, and all. It's all production for the most part. Most of these people are actors just reciting lines that have been prepared for them. And but true humor, being able to make a joke out of, some of the most mundane experiences, as they're happening, is quite powerful, very profound. And when you run into people that can do that effortlessly, it's they're almost like a healer in their own right. They bring a sort of energetic response to something that others might perceive, or maybe they subconsciously perceive this happening, and they just have this way of alleviating it or bringing things back to baseline for everything around them. But yeah, people that do this are very fascinating to me. And it's I think Anton LaVey also said something, I think, in The Devil's Notebook, towards the end. He said wit, is it's a lot like, any other skill. Either you have it or you don't. You can't really develop it. I'd like to think otherwise. I think anything can be developed, but that's a very important, I think. Humor is, like I said, it's like a knife. It cuts through anything. And a well-crafted knife, is more useful than a dull one. So
And just that effortlessness of laughter, and how much that feeds your as we said, your innermost self, your true self. It just feeds that, and it's a nourishing thing. And when, of course, Mark, you talked a little bit about your gut and how that affected your health. And I feel as though it goes on the mental side of things as well, in terms of like what we feed our mentality. I have noticed that too. We talked a little bit before the interview about the newest Dracula film, and I've noticed that the older I get, the more less interested in horror films I am, and in terms of how I feed my mentality. It becomes a bit like junk food, I suppose, and it's not really good for you. It may produce perhaps a pleasurable response at least initially, but there are some lasting effects to it. And so I tend to gravitate much more towards the older films these days. I don't really have much patience for your examples of your Terrifiers or anything like that. I don't have any interest in it. We had talked a little bit about that Dracula film, and I also mentioned the greatness of the 79 Dracula with Frank Langella. And I did want to mention too, for any listeners that are interested in that side of things, in terms of the adaptation of the book. The closest adaptation to the book was a BBC production from 1977, I believe. And I think the last time I checked was available on YouTube. And if you were to, there were two BBC productions, also one in the 2000s as well. But the one from the 1970s starred Louis Jourdan, one of my French compatriots, since I am largely French by descent. He produces a stillness and a calmness in the role, which is really quite remarkable. The ending of the character is traditional, but the way that he approached the role in terms of being absolutely in command of himself to begin with, and simply by that accord, in control of the situation that he found himself in. There is a very remarkable moment in the film where he has just, I guess I would say, initiated Mina and has escaped through the window. And Jonathan, or one of the other characters, Quincy Morris, perhaps, they had amalgamated two characters, Quincy Morris, Quincy, and I believe Arthur Holmwood. They had consolidated these two characters together. But anyway, one of them went to the window and has a gun, and Dracula stands and looks up at him and has this defiant sort of, he sort of shrugs in a way and puts his hands out as if to say, go right ahead, you know? And he forms into a mist and disappears. And I've always just admired that. You know, how many of us would like that power to be able to, if we were in a social situation, to simply just kind of put up our hands a little bit and just disappear into a mist? That would be rather remarkable. Don't you agree?
Yeah, one of my favorite physicists who's been in the black ops world talks about that when you can maintain an altered state of consciousness, and he's trained Navy SEALs, where it's a different law of physics if you're in an altered state of consciousness and function in the world, and we know that various examples, like a mother trying to save your child from underneath a car and having these extraordinary powers. So it is readily available, but it's a matter of training, or not necessarily effort, but alignment. So yeah, we're familiar with those kinds of stories and have our own
And
experiences too.
endurance, and endurance.
Yep, gotta have the consistency there. I mean, to me, one of the more prominent examples is the telepathy tapes, which has been mentioned in these different forums and online message boards, where you have these people who children that are can't function well in the 3D world, but meanwhile they're out there doing these extraordinary things beyond telepathy, and even going to a dreaming and gathering place called the Hill, which we can access. I experienced a thing hypnagogic, like where I was listening to the podcast telepathy tapes right before sleeping, and then I encountered a bunch of them, and they were doing these very exotic, like psychic technologies of geometry, and just it was, yeah. So Whitley Strieber's talked about being at the Hill, but I think that'd be a fun project to try to not necessarily remote view, but they're welcoming depending on the type of what your intentions are. There's something,
Absolutely.
yeah, there's something I discovered last night, and I've talked about it here and did a show. We did a show on it called Quantum Touch by Richard Gordon. Basically, having your awareness in your heart center and then projecting it out, and can make physical changes within seconds and minutes. And so what he's doing now is he was able to connect with those people from the Hill, and pass on messages. And Veda Austin, who's done work on the consciousness of water, has done the same thing. But I mean, these people are out there that are giving us, taking us to the next level of evolution freely. And so Richard Gordon wrote like three, four books, like the origins of this planet and different technologies, like the pyramids. So I just ordered a few of the books from Amazon, but he's done a bunch of postings on X, where people would ask about these kinds of things, and then you have these long, expansive answers on consciousness and basically what we're talking about. So really, really exciting, promising stuff. It all comes back down to awareness. And that's why we've titled the show what it is. So to you, Scorp, what does awake versus aware mean, and what do those words mean to you?
I will answer that in just one moment. I apologize here. I just need just one moment and I will be right
Yeah, no
back.
problem.
Sorry about that. Okay, thank
Oh,
you.
go ahead and do your thing. I could go further on. Yeah, so the books I got from Richard Gordon, it was all translating from talking to the people on the hill, the telepathy tapes kids. And it's not so much a gang, but like there's a lot of sharing. It's, I mean, I've talked about before my out of body group gatherings, like in the Intention film. And the closest, as far as my experience and getting a feel for what they're describing, is when I went to the Jin caves, their headquarters, their HQ, and did an out of body group gathering there. And that was like the most fun I've had. So if you combine like Halloween, New Year's Eve, 4th of July, you know, these beyond jubilant peak experiences as far as the 3D world goes, and put it into one pot. That's how it was. It's like very Cirque du Soleil, carnival, circus kind of thing, just wild. And it was so fun. I've been back there 2, 3 times over the years, but not recently. So people can definitely you can use me as a reference and go re visit that place. I just went to Wikipedia, and it's like Majis Al Jin or something. There's a couple books out there. Rosemary Ellen Guiley wrote one or two books, and of course the YouTube videos. But that concept of doing something right before you go to bed and it translating, I've had numerous times like that. It's not always consistent, but it does work. I think it's a matter of what is resonant to your nervous system, your body, and how that can be translated into the other side and its usefulness. I mean, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I like I've mentioned before in other shows, I've when I'm really, really wanting to fly that night or to work on my lucid awareness and to prolong it, I'll watch, you know, documentaries about, you know, aviation and even the bad stuff, even stuff with like, you know, plane crashes and stuff like that. And I've noticed that more often than not, I'll have a dream where I'm either in an airplane and it's crashing, or it does crash, or I end up in flight, whether that be through some ridiculous, strange, you know, way. Like for instance, the latest one that I had, I was on a boogie board on the beach, and a huge wave came up and propelled me into the air like a ramp, and I just kept going higher and higher and higher into the air, and I was riding this boogie board, you know, flat on my stomach, like a magic carpet, so to speak. I was able to fly it. And the pinnacle of my awareness in this experience came when I was going into the clouds. I was getting so high up, and I began to get terrified because I couldn't control it. And I'm not really too scared of heights, but just the feeling of being in the air like that high up, was absolutely just exhilarating and also quite a bit terrifying. And so I noticed, as I lost awareness of what I was doing, if I lost the awareness of the fineries of what I was doing with, as far as controlling this boogie board like an airplane, I would begin to fall, and I would free fall like I was skydiving. And then I would suddenly start to get this awareness back, and I would immediately, you know, arrest the descent, and I would go back to flying. So that's kind of how it was up and down, up and down. And I learned so much from the experience. I was able to jot it down. I remembered most of it, and I expanded further in the evening. I was able to reflect on it and go, okay, this is where, you know, this sensation occurred. This is what I was failing to do, and so the next experience was a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. But I find that if I immerse myself in a certain type of theme, that I'm probably going to dream about it. More often than not, sober, drinking, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's going to happen. And so, even with the alcohol, even after like a good day's worth of imbibing, I still have that awareness when I go to sleep. That doesn't really change. And so it's very, very interesting. And like for me, the sensation of falling and like skydiving type of experiences, I have those quite frequently. And to be honest, I find them terrifying. Like I'm pretty sure if I were to jump out of a plane tomorrow, and skydive, I would have the same exact reaction as I do in the dreams, to be honest. And so, but every little experience like that is a learning, is a building block to the next one. And there's a lot of fineries that I'm able to recount, that I'm able to log, and reflect on later and go, ah, okay, this is what you should do in this type of situation. And very fascinating stuff. But yeah, overall, absolutely. If I want to have an experience, I just either watch something or listen to something closely related to that theme, as I'm tired and going to bed. That's undeniable. Like that works, in my opinion.
That is excellent. Most remarkable. Yes.
Oh, yeah. No,
And
interestingly enough, my night sight experiences and a lot of my growth spurts have either come from experiences like that, like absolutely exhilarating, almost bordering on nightmarish, just in terms of like the adrenaline. And after these experiences where I'm free falling, for example, I'll wake up in a sweat. And same thing with nightmares, for example. What nightmares taught me were, this exact same thing, were just the keys to awareness of how to unlock this experience and change it. And so little by little, it's very incremental. It's not something you just, I don't think I've ever had one of those aha moments, immediately. And it's like, this is how I fix it. It's always been very, very, the awareness seems to be gradual. Like it just builds and builds and builds. And there's been maybe once I've had a very profound nightly experience and just came to it. Was like, oh wow, yeah, you're not real. And just, was able to alter the conditions of it right out the gate. But for the most part, for me, it's very incremental. And the increments occur under the most extreme of experiences, free falling or being killed, something like that. It's very, very, very fascinating to me. And I've learned over the years of having these experiences to not interpret them directly, to not put a whole lot of weight into them, to just simply put and to reflect upon exactly the sort of elements that I was experiencing and how I interacted with that and what I could use as far as what we all know and have verified to be, a sort of what's the term? To be the thing that unlocks it, the thing that ends it. And so, but for me, it's always extreme. And so I do have to be careful, when I go to bed as to what I'm watching or listening to. And especially when I'm tired, when I'm in a fatigue state and, I'm watching something, whether it's a documentary or a movie or listening to something, I do have to be sort of cognizant as to what that is, because nine times out of, or not nine, but I'd say maybe 7 times out of 10, I'm going to end up dreaming about this sort of theme. And yeah, so like that's been my experience with all that.
I love that the way that you shared about the dream with the boogie board and being able to change its attitude and altitude and all of that. I mean, because I've had a very similar experience myself. Mark, you were asking about this, and now I finally remembered some of my experiences. And my experience was very similar to yours, Caelius Augustus, in that it was a swing, I believe. And I was sitting on a swing because even as an adult, I've noticed that that's one of my little life hacks is that if a swing is available, all of a sudden, my issues and my difficulties in my life kind of go away, and I sort of revert and go back to the ECI of just enjoying going into the air, basically, and having that little momentary flight, especially when you can get enough speed going up so that when you reach the apex of your swing, that you sort of go out of the seat a little. But the dream that I had was starting out that way, swing back forth, back forth, back forth, and then just took off. And the chains didn't snap or anything violent or anything like that. It was just I was sitting in the seat and able to hold on to the seat and control the altitude and control my flight. And yes, I noticed that it's a bit like running out of fuel in a way, at times, in terms of if there are no, say, objects to latch on to in terms of, oh, yes, this would give the dream power. Then I would notice that the flight would kind of begin to dissipate. But if something is found using that path, very, I suppose, similar to shamanism in terms of finding a dream animal or your guide animal, your spirit animal, and latching on to that and absorbing its power and then continuing to fly from there. It's very interesting, too, that I still have recollections of dreams from decades prior. And one that I will share with you, just as an example, is that I was in a tower, near the top of a tower, and there were raining arrows from the sky. And it was a steady rain. It was not just a handful and then stop and then a handful and then stop. It was these many arrows which were falling. And I needed to get to an opposite tower. And for whatever reason, the door was locked behind me. And I couldn't go inside the building that I was in. I needed to fly over to this other tower. And of course, there were these arrows being tossed or raining down. And I did begin to fly across. And I remember only one hitting me and it being painful and reacting to that pain, but still continuing on. And it's entirely possible that once I reached my destination in this dream, the other tower, that this was somewhat prophetic because of the fact that it was before my diagnosis. This would probably been 15 years prior to it, but it was perhaps my subconscious, if you would, or otherwise, telling me that you can survive, that you will be all right, that you will deal with these arrows that come down from the sky, and you will be all right, and you'll persevere.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, I these things have an interesting way of manifesting themselves, that's for sure. And we find that, at least I have found with others that have embarked on this type of work over the course of their lives, even young folks or younger folks, I still consider myself quite young, but the younger folks seem to have a very similar, not recollection, but a similar conclusion. That this is something that's sort of like they're being prepped for something, or they're being prepared or trained for a specific hardship or trial or something far off into the future. I've never discounted that. I've never, that we have that phrase, you never want to count on doomsday, which I'm 100%, or you never want to bet on doomsday. You definitely want to maintain that, but every now and again, it's worthwhile to sort of, to ask yourself, what is the purpose of this? Like, is this just random noise? Is this just a random experience that's just being generated by my subconscious for whatever reason? Or is there a purpose to it? And I often try to take the purposeful path. And the personal mastery and personal control and power, I think, lies in whatever interpretation you land on that you decide to act upon in your waking life. That, to me, is the most important. And so it's a slippery slope. It can be, this is where certain people's tend to kind of descend into madness, I would suppose, the sort of madness of the shaman. And yeah, that can be easily remedied by just actively choosing your role in the experience and how you interpret it and how you expand upon it further. And so for me, I get the free falling one, that's a big one for me. And it's exhilarating, but it's also terrifying at the same time. And I've noticed that those experiences eclipse my awareness almost in the same way. The experience of becoming lucid during it and being able to control it is just as exhilarating. And
Absolutely.
that tends to sort of terminate, in most cases, that rush, that exhilaration. It tends to happen so fast that just, I guess, things overload and it's just time to wake up from it. But learning, and again, it's just a small, for me, it's just a small bit by bit process. It's a matter of waking up, logging the dream, just the basic outline of it. If I'm able to do that, then I'm able later in the evening or when it's time to reflect on the day to go back to it and to sort of dissect it a bit and to go, okay, this worked, that didn't work. And then But I've also noticed too that in other types of dreams and other types of lucid experiences, that if we take the awareness that we gain from that experience, if we're able to become lucid at all, or if, even if we're just able to recollect it enough, we can literally map out what we need to do, in our day to day. We can figure out our own shortcomings in a sense, if that makes any sense. There's tremendous wisdom in how we interact nightly with our dreams as to how we interact with the day and in our day to day, because I think that those habits, those apprehensions, all those things that our nervous system pilots in our day to day are present in the nightly dream to a large extent. And so I think that there's a lot of wisdom in understanding these things and not maybe understanding the overall message or meaning of the dream. I don't really find a whole lot of, people that like to do
Definitely.
dream analysis and stuff like that. I don't find very much use for that. I find the most use in how the individual interacted with it, and how they can use that to their benefit going forward. I think that's peak lucidity over time. So sorry, I didn't mean to go on a lecture circuit here, but.
Not at all. It was simply a matter of I was just going to add that you go approach each situation in terms of how does this serve me? And how does it, and if it doesn't serve me, then perhaps we need to reconsider putting ourselves in that situation. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, how can we see this to our benefit? What can be used with what's because I think any experience can be useful to greater or smaller degrees. I think there's always some use in our experience, and that's where I think at the base level, I think that's where reason comes into play for at least for the beginner. And it's a good starting point, to be reasonable. And to under again, it all comes down to the individual. How the individual interacts with these types of experiences is, I think, the key to it all. No matter how traumatic or anything, and it's a skill that's learned over a lifetime. You don't really figure this out immediately. So, yeah, the more experiences you can have in this arena, the better, I think, and the more you can be proactive. Not you, but how the individual can be proactive
Oh,
is absolutely paramount, I think.
And that training of that the autonomic nervous system. I'm no medical expert or anything like that, but I do believe that I've heard that to train yourself that form a new habit, you have if you do this new habit for 30 days, then it will stick, and that's that matter of training that your nervous system to believe create a new neural pathway. So there's my armchair medical analysis for the day for how that affects things. Yes.
Yeah, and there's absolutely, evidence for that in the real world with concepts like neuroplasticity and, like you mentioned, neural pathways, being opened up, and a different way. It's basically training your nervous system, I think, because those two things are so, the mind and the nervous system are so in so completely linked that you change one, you change the other. To some degree. So, absolutely. Yeah, the that angle is very important. What do you think, Mark?
Great discussions. Thanks, guys. Scorp, I don't know if there any other topics you want to get into, or if you have some kind of blog online presence you can share with the audience. If not, no problem. If they want to get a message to you, they can always reach out to us. But any other topics you want to discuss?
No, I don't think so. I wanted to just say thank you so much for this time today, and I have had a just a wonderful experience with all this, and I've learned a great deal. I've learned that there is some study that I need to do because of the number of wonderful sounding books that have been brought up in the course of this recording session. And yes, please do. Any of those books that you all have mentioned in the course of this, please do send me either an email or a message with that, with those, because I would very much like to add them to my wish list on Amazon, because it will help sort of break me out a bit of my reading funk to a degree, I think, to be exposed to something. One of the two ways that I do that is by revisiting old favorites. The Richard Matheson novel I Am Legend is my top favorite book, and for fiction anyways, and my one of my favorites in nonfiction, you mentioned Kingsley, the Dark Places of Wisdom, and also his book, A Story Waiting to Pierce You, is also quite remarkable. This concept of this wild man basically in this state of perpetual ecstasy. And I just was reminded, whenever I think about that, I'm often reminded of a film that I saw in a church once, that it depicted John the Baptist as an absolute wild man. And that just rather stuck with me. And once I read Kingsley's book, I was like, that's an interesting connection that we just made there.
Yeah, the concept of divine madness is never is always surprising. But yeah, we'll definitely pass it your way. I think also in the descriptions of the video and maybe podcast, we'll have some of the recommended. But Shari Edwards is one of them. I mostly get it through podcasts, the Sound Health Options. They have a podcast, and just putting her name as far as the sound healing, and for Twitter X at Richard Gordon 22 for that extension of the telepathy tapes and the kids reaching out to us for consciousness expansion. Halas, any other additions here before we close?
No, I'm good, and I really appreciate your time, Scorp, and your willingness to share your personal experiences with some of the physical ailments that you've been battling. And absolutely, congratulations on the 6 years sober. That's a remarkable achievement. And hopefully, if you're willing to share it when the time comes, I'd like to help celebrate your 10th year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I'd be more than happy to do so. Thank you so much, everyone, for a very pleasurable experience and a good way to spend my afternoon. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you
Likewise.
back again. Anything you
Yes.
want to discuss, you know, it's this was a fun discussion. So thank you so much for coming on in this new moon eclipse that we're having. So
Absolutely. We'll discuss the moon next time, I believe. Yes.
yeah, definitely. So thanks everybody for listening. We'll catch you next.
You have been listening to Awake versus Aware, a production of CosmicReality.com. Thank you for listening.